Araya,
Araya,
enemies,
enemies,
of thee,
of thee,
although
he
indeed,
Sandeya,
eligible for a truce. Sati,
being so,
Karya Artha Gaurave,
in the matter of an important duty,
Ahi,
snake,
Mushika,
mouse,
but
like
Deva,
O demigods,
he
indeed,
Artasya,
of interest,
Paravin,
position,
Katai,
so being.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
Jai, Srila Prabhupada.
O demigods, fulfilling one's own interests is so important that one may even have to make a truce with one's enemies. For the sake of one's self-interest, one has to act according to the logic of the snake and the mouse. Did you repeat?
O demigods,
fulfilling one's own interests
is so important
that one may even have to make a truce
with one's enemies.
For the sake of one's self-interest,
one has to act according
to the logic of the snake and the mouse. A snake and a mouse were once caught in a basket. Now, since the mouse is food for the snake, this was a good opportunity for the snake. However, since both of them were caught in a basket, even if the snake ate the mouse, the snake would not be able to get out. Therefore, the snake thought it would be wise to make a truce with the mouse and asked the mouse to make a hole in the basket so that both of them could get out. The snake's intention was that after the mouse made the hole, the snake would eat the mouse and escape from the basket through the hole.
This is called the logic of the snake and the mouse. Om jnanam dasya ganam jana shalakaya chakshurum militam yena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadah Mahyam Darati Swaparantikam. So here in this verse it says Arayo Bihi Sandena, that even though these enemies, the demons, they are eligible for a truce, still, sati kardiyartha gaurave, kardiyartha gaurave. Gaurave means very grave or very important. And Srila Prabhupada here says, the whole thing, kardiya artha, in the matter of an important duty. So kardiya artha, to do something whose purpose is very important. When the purpose is very important, one may even have to make a truce, although certainly a truce with the demons is not a very desirable situation. It's like sometimes we see our devotees, they have to make a truce with materialistic persons in order to, for sustenance, have to work in the society of materialistic persons. Of course, Srila Prabhupada hoped that we would have our own communities and so, you know. But anyway, it's not so easy to keep up with Srila Prabhupada, you know. As we discovered over the years, Prabhupada could do so many things, and even so many empowered devotees can do so many things, but when we're very conditioned, then it's not so easy to follow them. Sometimes Very difficult even for devotees to follow the most basic thing, like chant 16 rounds and follow the four regulated principles, what to speak of doing this and establishing self-sufficient communities and doubling book distribution every year, and you know, everything that Srila Prabhupada requested of us requires that we be pure devotees. So that was also his request. So maybe we should work on that one first, then we can do all the other thing. So therefore, this important duty, ahimushika, but just like the snake and the mouse. So this is, Srila Prabhupada uses the purport to explain his logic, that one has to remember, no, the hi artasya paravim gataya, that we certainly have our own interest. In this case, the interest of the demigods is to protect the universe. So they know that a truce with the demons is not a way to protect the universe. But just like the snake, of course, we'd probably associate a snake more with the demons than the demigods. No, snakes are like, have that envious nature. Like, but in this case, the snake is the demigods and the mouse is the demon. In that sense, the snake is more intelligent, more crafty. Here, the demigods are being advised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes Krishna uses strategy. It's like Krishna had all kinds of strategies throughout the Mahabharata. A strategy to get rid of Karna, a strategy to deal with Bhishma Dev. He had all kinds, just like when Duryodhana was a little disappointed because so many of his soldiers were being killed. And he knew that Bhishma had the ability to kill the Pandavas, but the Pandavas had not been killed yet. So then he accused Bhishma. He said, actually, I think you're favoring the Pandavas, even though you promised me. Because as we see in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Duryodhana is very careful to warn Dronacharya. And he also warned Bhishma. Of course, that's not in the part of the Bhagavad Gita, just before that. He also warned Bhishma that, you know, I know that the Pandavas are very dear to you, but you're on my side. You have to get rid of the Pandavas. Because Arjuna, Duryodhana knew that as long as the Pandavas are alive, that the soldiers on the other side would fight. But if the Pandavas were eliminated, then the whole thing's finished. And there's no reason to fight anymore. So he was very anxious. Because he knew also that there were only three people really who could defeat the Pandavas. And that was Karna, Duryodhana, and Bhishma. Otherwise, everybody else, no, they may have been great fighters, but they had no chance against the Pandavas. So, so many soldiers had been lost, and actually Duryodhana had been defeated. So, Dronacharya had been defeated. So Duryodhana went to Bhishma and said, you could kill all the Pandavas, but you're favoring them. So Bhishma became, you know, this was a challenge to his Kshatriya honor, that he was favoring someone in battle. Because even Krishna, as we discussed yesterday, even Krishna doesn't favor the demigods over the demons, but he judges everyone according to their merit. But of course, because the demigods have more merit than the demons, then Krishna will favor them more. But due to their merit. So in this case, they didn't have merit because they had insulted the great saintly person, Durvasa Muni. And the demons had very carefully worshipped Shukaracharya. So they actually had the vantage point. So therefore, Krishna is telling them, Lord Vishnu is telling them, that now you have to get the vantage point. You have to make an agreement, and then I will make an arrangement. I will come as Kurma, and I will, you know, I will balance everything out. And then they will get the poison, and you will get the nectar. Of course, he didn't explain all the details at that point. And Krishna's pastimes are always full of excitement. When he killed Hiranyakashipu, in the form of Nrisimhadev. He let Hiranyakashipu get up several times and charge at him. And at those moments, because the demigods are sakama bhaktas. So a sakam bhakta, meaning a bhakta, one is a devotee, but one has so many desires. Whenever their desires are threatened, their faith can be slightly diminished in Krishna. They think, why is Krishna not doing this? Why is Krishna not arranging? Because they think of everything in terms of their sense gratification. They don't think of things in terms of pleasing Krishna. They know they have to please Krishna, but also part of an important part of that formula, and that's why it's being mentioned here by the Lord. He mentions two times your self-interest, your important duty, and your self-interest. This is very important, because you have to. Krishna would not have to tell that to his pure devotees. He didn't have to tell that to Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj didn't wonder, why is it that the Lord didn't kill him right away? Why is he? He knew that whatever the Lord's doing, even if the Lord lets him go, that's his desire, because he's the supreme independent personality of Godhead. So in the form of kurma, he also did the same thing. They churned the nectar out of the ocean. First, all the poison came out. Then the nectar came out. And when the nectar came out, the demigods stole it. The demons stole it. And the demigods were in... Then again, they were in distress. Because the Lord always makes his pastimes very exciting. Because this is the way that Krishna creates faith in his devotees. By showing them, putting them into a very difficult position. And then he comes and saves them. But if we are sakam, if we are too conditioned by so many desires, then whenever the situation becomes difficult, we begin to doubt. As I was explaining yesterday in program, that doubt, that's why Arjuna says in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Madhusudana, please kill this demon of doubt. Because doubt arises when my material situation, or my material condition, or my sense gratification is put into jeopardy. And immediately there's doubts. Why is it Krishna? Why is Krishna doing this to me? I did so many artiks. I've been serving him for so many years. Why is this happening to me? I should be just on the verge of going off to Vrindavan and just chanting my rounds peacefully until death. I'm working up to that. That's my plan. But we have to remember what is Krishna's plan, which is not so easy to figure out. Even great, great devotees, even Parikshit Maharaj couldn't figure out what was Krishna's plan. He's saying, why did I put this snake? It must be Krishna. What's his plan? No, he didn't know. And then Shukadeva Goswami appears to enlighten him. Then he could understand what was Krishna's plan. So here the Lord says, let's use this philosophy. Now another variant on that particular mouse and snake philosophy is the philosophy of the camel and the scorpion. And they were both standing on the river, and the scorpion was thinking, how will I get across this river? It's a little tiny insect. So he approached a camel. Camel was standing there too, getting ready to cross. He said, brother, of course, nobody considers the scorpion his brother, but can you help me get across? And he said, oh no, I'm not going to help you because you'll sting me. And that wouldn't be very logical, because if I sting you, then we would both drown. So camel thought about it, because camels are not known to be very philosophical. No? And you can look at their face and you can tell. And so he said, yeah, that sounds good. So he said, okay. And so he got on top of his hump, and the camel gets halfway across the river, and the scorpion stings him. No? So camel said, why did you do that? Now we'll both drown. I can't help it, it's my nature. So this is like materialistic persons. They make all kinds of elaborate plans, but they don't take into account the three modes of material nature, which will force them. Now, just like now, the whole planet is in turmoil. What will happen with the economy? This and that. And there are very intelligent people behind whatever's happening, thinking we've got everything under control. And in every country, there's very intelligent people who think we've got... And sometimes their manipulation works out very nice. But the thing that they can't take into account is that because they're doing everything for their own selfish, motivated, even when there's a moralist, a person that's very moral and a person that's very immoral, if they're not devotees of the Lord, then ultimately it's all immorality. It's just a question of degree. No. Because in the relative world, we establish certain things. This is moral, this is immoral. But on the absolute plane, what is moral is what Krishna wants. That is morality. And what is immoral is what Krishna doesn't want. And that's very simple. But in this world, there's all kinds of relative truths and relative degrees of judging something. And therefore, you have all these different religions, and they're all judging one another, that this is not right, and this is what you're doing is not right, and they're all fighting. Actually, they're fighting more than anyone else. Just like you can, you know, there was the Hundred Years' War. That was like one of the longest wars. But if you really consider it, the longest war has been going on for hundreds of years, even thousands of years. The war between personalists and impersonalists. You know, the war between Christians and Muslims. These wars go on for thousands of years. Whereas, you know, some political war may go on for 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 100 years. Now that's about the longest one. And then somebody else takes over and things change, and then they fight with somebody else. But this particular war, based on religious differences, it's just a question because of relativity. But when there is actually an understanding of the absolute truth, therefore the Bhagavatam begins by saying, Vedavastavam, that this Bhagavatam is meant to distinguish between reality and relativity. That the truth, the real absolute truth, and relativity. And relativity, what is relativity? Tejo Bharimidam Yata Vinimayo Yatra Trisagom Risha. Relativity means that there are these elements, fire, water, air, ether, and earth. And they're all being transformed in different ways. And it appears to be real. And then what to speak of with the transformation of mind, intelligence, and ego done on the subtle platform. But all these are done by the energies of the Lord, and they appear to be real. Everyone thinks they're real. In all different platforms of performance, the karmis, they think all this materialistic manifestation is real. The jnanis, they think that their opinion is real. The yogis, they think that their mystic powers are supreme. And the devotees, they think that Krishna is supreme. Therefore, devotees are the only ones that can be peaceful. Krishna bhakti niskam ateva shanta. But bhukti mukti siddhikam shakaliya shanta. That the karmis, the jnanis, and the yogis, they can never be peaceful. Because they always have their self-interest. So therefore, Prahlad Maharaj, he stated, what is real self-interest? Nate vidur svartakatim hi Vishnu. Real self-interest is to understand Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of God. This is real self-interest. Of course, a pure devotee is not self-interested. But until one is actually a pure devotee, there's always a degree of self-interest. Even the yogis who are meditating on Paramatma, they're thinking that my self-interest, I want to be happy. I want to be spiritually happy. But Srila Prabhupada said, the mood of the gopis, which is the mood of the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is that I'm not even looking for happiness, not even spiritual happiness. I just want Krishna to be happy. Because a devotee doesn't calculate in this way, but a devotee knows automatically that if Krishna is happy, everything is all right. Because Krishna is taking care of us on every platform, material platform, mental platform, every platform, spiritual platform, Krishna is taking care of us. Therefore, Krishna is pleased, even if I'm not happy, then this is what Srimati Radharani says, even if I'm not happy, If Krishna is happy, that is my happiness. So this is what we're trying to attain, this consciousness. So going back to this idea of self-interest, Prahlad Maharaj said, Durashaya hi bahir artha manina. That dura ashaya, when people have durashaya or consciousness polluted by material conceptions, then bahir artha manina, they can only see things in terms of sense gratification. And therefore, andayatandaya upaniyamanas, they can. It's just a question when people have this conception of life, it's just a question of one person leading another one into illusion. There are different degrees of illusion in the relative world. Just like the highest degree or the most subtle manifestation of illusion is the impersonal philosophy. This is illusion. But it's very nicely done because it's all in terms of the Vedas, there's austerities, penances, there's a conception of the Supreme, which is actually a valid conception of the Supreme. But it doesn't reach the ultimate conception of the Supreme. And so this impersonal, in Mayavad, impersonal understanding is very difficult to penetrate for most people. And also people favor it because it eliminates the authority of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the authority is there because they follow all kinds of rules and regulations and disciplines and austerities and penances, but still somehow or another they feel that they're independent from the ultimate authority of the Lord, because the ultimate authority of the Lord is, you surrender to me, then I'll make you happy. But actually that surrendering process, when you perceive it from the material side, the material point of view, it seems like surrender is very troublesome. And it's also limited. It's limiting my ability, my freedom. If I surrender to Krishna, I have to follow these principles, I have to do this, I have to chant. But materialistic persons or people who calculate in that way, they can't see that there are so many more limitations being imposed upon them by Maya. And therefore Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that this is called the regulative principles of freedom. Just like in this country there was a revolutionary war. So there had to be a war, there had to be a fight to attain freedom, or whatever degree of freedom that they attained, which was more than they had before. So they had to fight. So also Krishna says, you have to fight. No, you have this enemy. It's like here we have the enemy, the mouse and the snake, they're enemies. But they had to make an agreement. No. So we have this enemy, Maya's influence. And we have to go beyond Maya's influence. Therefore, we have to make a truce with Maya. No. We have to make a truce in the sense that we have to engage Maya in the service of Krishna. Yatarham vayunjitaha. As Rupa Goswami says, with careful discrimination. Because, especially in Kali Yuga, who can be beyond the influence of Maya? The material energy is so strong in Kali Yuga. There are no beautiful forests. Just like if you read in the Ramayana, when Lord Ramachandra went into the forest, he was thinking, oh, it's so beautiful here, so lush and green, rivers and all the animals are interacting so nicely with one another, and everything was very nice and very beautiful. But now we go into the forest, it's full of thorns, mosquitoes. I mean, in that age, there weren't so many nasty things. Now you go into the forest, all kinds of difficult situations. And so Kali Yuga, we're stuck. We're very much stuck. The material energy is very, very strong. And difficult to surpass. So So Rupa Goswami says you have to make a truce with Maya. And what is that truce? Yataraham upayunjataha. Upayunjataha means very careful discrimination. You have to engage it. Yukta vairagya uchate. This is called yukta vairagya. And that yukta vairagya is nirbandha krishna sambandhe. That we will become detached from matter by engaging matter in Krishna's service. Now, this is our truce. And then afterwards, after we engage that matter in Krishna's service, we will gradually become detached from matter. We will gradually become detached from material existence. This is our arrangement. And even if we look at the present, this philosophy, which is being spoken about here, if you look at modern society, again going back to the situation that we have nowadays, that everyone is becoming very concerned that the economy is falling all over the world. But this is the same mouse and snake philosophy. In this case, the snake means those that are controlling society. So what do? The little mouse, that's us, you make them work very hard, thinking that, when I get out of this basket, after I work very hard, I'm going to have all kinds of benefits. I'm going to have this, social security, and everything. But then after you work very hard, and you get out, you just make that hole, and then the snake comes, if you look at history, people are just working harder and harder and harder all the time. And then they think, now I'll be able to, Just like one devotee was telling me in Mexico, he said, when I started working, he's a doctor, and there's system of medicine is a little more socialized, so he's working for the government hospital. So he said, when I began, the retirement age was 55. So when I was about 53, then they made it 60. And then he said, now I'm 58, and they just changed it to 65. So you just keep working. There's always something. And their logic is, well, people are living longer, therefore they can work longer. Otherwise, instead of thinking just the opposite, when there's a devotee in charge, like King Pratapa Rudra, so he saw his devotees, Ramananda Roy, he said, my dear king, you are my good friend, and you're the one who determines what I do. I want to serve Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, oh, okay. Then I'll double your salary and you can retire. So this is what you have when you have a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava thinks, well, this devotee wants to serve the Lord. You have to give him all facility. But now in Kali Yuga, when you have non-devotees in charge, they think someone wants to be religious, let us punish him. Give him a hard time. Make it very difficult. Because materialistic society means we want everyone to serve the interest of those that are in charge. Of course, in spiritual society also, we want everyone to serve the interest of the person in charge, but that's Krishna. But then Krishna's interest is serving everyone else's interest. Otherwise, our own self-interest, if it's materialistic, then it's tepisha tantriyam urudhamni badha. It just tightens the rope of material existence until we can't go on. So, what is the solution? How can we find out what is our real self-interest? This was Arjuna. Arjuna came to this point. Up to a certain point, he was having friendly talks with Krishna. When he approached Krishna in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he was having friendly talks. And he was discussing the matter. It was a friendly talk. There they were, going onto the battlefield. Everything's okay. Arjuna's ready to go. And then he says, Krishna, take my chariot up between the two armies. I want to see who's there. Who has assembled there to engage in battle. Then Arjuna looks and says, oh, these are all my relatives. So he begins to talk with Krishna in this friendly way. Friendly way means that he's arguing with Krishna. No, he begins to argue with Krishna. We discussed that a little bit last night in one program, one part of that argument, saying, Krishna, you're supposed to give me good times and pleasure. No, this is the materialistic conception of God, that you're supposed to give me all kinds of pleasure and happiness. Why are you putting me in this situation? And then he goes on and he develops his logic further. Okay, so I gave you that argument, you didn't accept it. Know, that you're supposed to give me pleasure. So here's my next argument, that all these people, if we engage in this battle, what's going to happen to women? What's going to happen to society? Then there'll just be a few people left over. Women will be unprotected. There'll be Varna Sankara. There'll be so many disturbances in society. So this is all friendly talks. Otherwise, no. Arjuna had not officially accepted Krishna as guru, as his spiritual master. Therefore, he can argue. No, yeah. Krishna gives him some indication. Then Krishna says to Arjuna that, why are you talking like this? No, an Aryan doesn't speak like this. This is, where is this contaminated philosophy come upon, Arjuna? No, get up and fight. No. And then Arjuna gives some more arguments. And then as he begins to argue again in this friendly way, Arjuna begins to realize that this is not getting me anywhere. I'm becoming more confused. So Karpanya Dosha Pahata Swabhava. Now I'm totally bewildered. I feel weak. I feel totally confused. No. And therefore now Krishna, I have to surrender to you. Shishasteham Sharimam Tvam Prapanam. I surrender to you. I am your disciple. Please instruct me. And how should you instruct me? Shreya. You must tell me what is Tat Shreya Shanishchitam Bruhitan Me. You must tell me exactly what is good for me. No. Because I don't know what's good for me. So this is what surrender means. Surrender means, as Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, he said two things. There's two things to begin the surrender process. First of all, Ashocha Sanvashocha Stvam Pragyabhadamascha Vashase Gatasuma Gatasumscha Nanushochanti Sampanditaha. The first part of the surrender is you must realize that you're a fool. Otherwise, you came before me and you said you want me to instruct you. And you said that you want to be my disciple, and then you said, I won't fight. I said, this is a fool. So understand that you're a fool, so that I can instruct you. Otherwise, if one thinks that I'm very intelligent, and I can challenge the spiritual master, and I can ask all kinds of challenging questions, as Krishna says further on, tadvidi pranipatena. No, you must be pranipat. Pranipat means to fall down with full surrender. No. Pranam, so prani, full surrender. No. So you have to do this. And so he said, first you take a humble position. And then, the next thing you have to do is tam tatikshasva bharata. You have to tolerate. No. Whatever comes, I'm going to give you some instruction. You have to tolerate, otherwise you have to accept it. That means, tolerate means to accept. You have to be humble enough to accept my instructions, and then you have to fully accept them by accepting all the resultant and concomitant circumstances or results that come from those instructions. You can't go back and forth. This was Krishna's indication. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has told us the same thing. First you become humble, then you become tolerant. Then you can actually see things as they are. And of course, later on, Krishna gives the same instruction. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu extracted this third verse of this Yukshastika from Bhagavad Gita. First you become humble, then you tolerate. Then, after that, you have to see all beings, that all beings are the same. No? Vidyavinaya Sambhane. An intelligent person sees that all living beings are on the same platform. And then, when you're seeing that, nirmama nirahangara, without any false ego, you should understand that nothing belongs to me. Everything belongs to Krishna. No. When that understanding is there, then there can be some transmission of transcendental knowledge. Otherwise, no. What can you, how can we actually advance the spiritual life if we don't have this humility, if we don't have this surrender, if we don't have, if we don't tolerate the circumstances that come? No. And therefore, every great devotee of the Lord, we can see, they had to tolerate so many things. No. The most potent example is Srila Prabhupada, the most immediate example. Why did Srila Prabhupada have to tolerate all these things? Was he learning something? No. Srila Prabhupada didn't have to learn anything. He descended from the spiritual world. He didn't have to learn anything. But he was teaching us. So a devotee, especially in Kali Yuga, a devotee has to teach by example. Therefore we examine all the lives of all the great acharyas. Krishna put them through so many trials and tribulations. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, born in a Sakha family where the Saktas, they were worshipping Durga, they had all these big festivals, and he used to say that he would see them, roasting the goats and the buffaloes, he could smell the buffalo meat. I remember once I went to Karachi, that's all you could smell everywhere, is buffalo, burning buffalo flesh. Everywhere, cooking buffaloes. Such an unpleasant sensation. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and then so many things happened, his whole village got wiped out, he got married, his wife died, so many difficulties. So these acharyas are going through all these things, what are they teaching us? That you should tolerate. That you have to be humble and you have to tolerate and you have to accept the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when Krishna wants to bless you with some opulence for his service, then that will come. And when Krishna wants to bless you by taking everything away, then we welcome that the same way, with the same. When we come to that platform, that we can welcome hardship with the same enthusiasm, that we can welcome all kinds of favorable circumstances, materially favorable circumstances and opulence, then Krishna will actually give us something. But first he has to see, is this devotee ready? Of course Krishna already knows, but he's putting us into a little bit of difficulty so that we can see, am I ready or am I not ready? If in the face of difficulty, I think this is so wonderful. Krishna is giving me this problem, giving me that problem. No. As Queen Kunti said, give me more problems. No. Give me unlimited problems, Krishna. Because by doing that, I'll understand that there's nothing for me here in this material world and that the only thing I want is your darshan. No. So give me unlimited. Of course, we may not be that advanced that we just beg for unlimited problems. No. But at least what we can do is whatever little problems we have, which are basically, we compare our problems to Srila Prabhupada's problems of getting this Krishna consciousness movement started, or compared to the problems that Ramanujacharya had to establish his mission, or any great acharya. And our problems are not so great. Our problems are like, I need a little more money, or I need this, or, these things aren't going right, I'm a little sick, or I'm having this difficulty. Our problem, generally speaking, for some devotees have greater problems than others, but our real problem is that we're not Krishna conscious. Because once we're Krishna conscious, every problem, every difficulty, every favorable circumstance in this world is the same. It's all Krishna's mercy. Everything is composed of Krishna's mercy. Therefore, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur said, Vishvapurnam Sukhayate. I can only see happiness in this world, in this universe. No. I only see happiness. I don't see anything else. Because everything is being done by Krishna. And everything is being done by Krishna for my ultimate benefit. Therefore, I can only see happiness. There is no pain, there is no misery. Even Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Jiva Dharma, the argument is given, which a lot of people give this argument, even sometimes devotees think about, contemplate this argument. The argument was that if everything comes from Krishna, then therefore suffering must also come from Krishna. Therefore, because Krishna knows past, present, and future, Krishna knows that the living entity coming into this material world will suffer. Therefore, Krishna is the cause of suffering. Well, that was the argument. And the counter-argument was, no. Because if one is actually in transcendental consciousness, there is no suffering. Whether one is within a material body or a spiritual body, if one is actually totally meditating, totally absorbed in the Supreme, there is no suffering. So therefore, this conception, Krishna has contemplated everything in terms of the pure, the nature of the pure soul. And there is no suffering for the pure soul. Whether the pure soul, therefore, Lord Shiva said to his wife Parvati, that a pure devotee, because she was amazed how Chitraketu accepted her curse. And Shiva said, no, there's no problem. Pure devotee, he can be in heaven, hell, anywhere. It's the same for him. He can be a demon's body or a devotee's body, this body, that body. It's the same. Pure devotee has only one thing to do, to serve Krishna. So if the circumstances become materially favorable or unfavorable, as a devotee has the same situation. Therefore, this particular verse is illustrating that if we get into a difficult circumstance, we just have to see how to serve Krishna. How can we turn that circumstance into a favorable condition so that we can serve Krishna? And this was something that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he stated that the fact that I am breathing, the fact that I am existing in this material world means that I have no love for Krishna. Otherwise, if I had love for Krishna, I would have given up this body, which is not favorable. Otherwise, he was just contemplating when he began to chant the holy name with total absorption. He was thinking, the fact that I'm maintaining this body, otherwise the fact that I'm trying to enjoy this world to some degree, to any degree, means that I have no love for Krishna. Just to show, he's full of love for Krishna, and devotees may have some love for Krishna. But in terms of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in terms of the six Goswamis, even in terms of Srila Prabhupada, we see in terms of the Bhagavatam that there's no leeway. There's no intermediate platform. No. Although there is an intermediate stage, but the Bhagavatam explains everything in terms of pure devotional service. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu expressed his sentiments in terms of pure devotional service. And a pure devotee feels that if I have any material desires, a pure devotee's way of seeing things is so different. Just like Raghava Pandit. Raghava Pandit's pure devotion is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Different. Our idea of devotional service is, well, I try to do something for Krishna and I try to offer everything to Krishna. That's our conception. His conception is that Krishna has to be totally pleased and everything has to be perfect for Krishna. So one time he was very careful how he worshipped his deities. And he went to the marketplace and he went all through the marketplace to find the most perfect coconuts to offer to the Lord. And then he found the coconuts and he brought them back to his home. And he thought, well, it's not time for the offering yet and I have to go out and get some more ingredients. So let me put these coconuts up on top of the doorway so that no one will see them, because if anyone sees them, then I can't offer them to the deity. Imagine that. So then he went out and he came back just before the offering and he looked down on the ground, and he saw there were some footprints. He goes, oh no, now I can't offer the coconuts. Because someone has entered in here, and when they entered in, their feet stirred up some dust, and that dust has touched the coconuts. Therefore, now they can't be offered. I have to go get some more coconuts. So this is the nature of pure devotion. Or another example of being absorbed in Krishna to that degree. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to South India, when he was near Sri Rangam, after he had just left Sri Rangam, he was traveling south, and he came upon one Brahmin. And this Brahmin invited him. He said, please come and please give me the honor of cooking lunch for you tomorrow. So Mahaprabhu said, okay. So he came the next day, and he looked around. He didn't see the Brahmin. He didn't see any lunch. So he went, he saw the Brahmin sitting down like this, his head down, lamenting. He said, my dear Brahmin, you invited me to lunch, but there's no lunch. And he said, how can I cook when this Ravana has stolen Sita? No. How can I possibly cook when this has happened? He was so absorbed in his pastimes of Ram that this pastime came to his mind that Sita has been stolen by Ram. And now Sita has been touched by this evil demon. The whole universe is finished. No. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, No. Actually, that Sita was never, she was never actually taken by Ravana. Actually, this was Maya Sita. No. And actually, Sita was always very much protected by Ram, and he consoled him, and Raman became very happy. He said, yes, he went and cooked very quickly, cooked up lunch, and offered it to Mahaprabhu. So this is the devotee's world. The devotee's world is very different. And therefore, when we contemplate the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, how to conduct this society, how to conduct our spiritual lives, we may find something which seems that it's unreachable. It's beyond our capabilities, beyond our possibilities. But no, we have to understand this is the devotee's world. In the devotee's world, just like young people, they have, Disney World and all these things where animals are talking to one another. And this was, people nowadays, they consider that the Puranas were not valid, because all the animals are talking, Ramayana, the monkeys are talking, the Jatayu, the vulture is talking, everybody, all the different species of life are talking to one another. So this must be mythology. No. They actually can't think that in previous ages, human beings were more advanced and animals were more advanced. Therefore, they could speak. No. But they won't think like that. They'll say, this is mythology. Therefore, let us reject it and shove material existence down your throat so that we can become more wealthy. No. This is the plan of the materialists. But the devotees, they have their own world. And that world, dhamna swena sada, kuhakam nirastra, satyam param dimahi. That world, which is beyond material existence, how can we approach it? Satyam param dimahi, by meditation. By this, the access to that spiritual plane, we can only access it by meditation. And what is that meditation? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. That is the meditation. If we have this intense meditation, then we can go, we can see, yes, Srila Prabhupada wasn't proposing something that's not tangible, that's not practical. He was proposing reality. And that reality is starting to unfold. Now the whole material plan which we've bought into, have a house that I have to pay on for so many years, I have a car that I have to pay on for, and what happens if I don't have any more money? They'll take it away. No. But who's taking it away? Is the mortgage company taking it away? Is the bank taking it? No. Krishna's taking it away. Saying, no, you should have followed Srila Prabhupada. No. Naughty boy. Naughty girl. No. He should have followed his plan. So when we don't follow the plan of the Supreme Lord or the Supreme Lord's devotee, then at some point something will happen. Krishna will slap us on the hand, or maybe it'll be a slap on the cheek or somewhere else. No, maybe a little more instructive, the slap. But we just have to have faith that Krishna has a perfect plan. And our plan is not so perfect. This is the whole subject matter of our life, of our existence in this world. To understand that our plan, however perfect we may think it is, however much we, you know, like as it says here, we think of our own self-interest, we plan things very carefully. The only real self-interest, Swartha Katim Hi Vishnu, is to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, at some point in time, in everybody's life, who declares oneself a devotee, then you have to be ready, you know, that when Krishna decides that now it's your time, you know, you have to surrender to me. Then, yasyaham anugrinami, harisye taddanam shanai, Krishna will take everything away. No. Unless we give up everything before that time, then Krishna will say, "All right, you're tarrying, you're taking too long. So let me just take everything away, and then you'll make it in this lifetime." Krishna wants us to make it in this life. This is what Srila Prabhupada said. Other people may say, "No, it takes 3 lifetimes, 10 lifetimes, unlimited lifetimes." No. This is the idea that still they're lingering there in India. But we have so many lifetimes, so now I have to do my duty, and then after some, you know, you postpone, surrender. No, but I have my duty now to my family, and then I have another duty, and then I'll have another duty, and I have another duty, and then I could have to take another birth, but then at that birth, I'll reach heavenly planets, and then it'll be easier. We're always thinking like that. If I just do this, and if I finish this, then it'll be easier, and I can finally surrender to Krishna. But Krishna may not buy into our plan. No, he has his plan. And better that we buy into Krishna's plan. And that plan is sarvadhammam parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. You give up all these temporary considerations and just surrender to me. No. And then everything will be perfect. No. So this is indirectly what the Lord is saying here. That this is my plan, you follow this plan. No, make a truce with the demons. No. Because you're not going to win the battle. No, you're at a disadvantage. They have 2 advantages, but some of you weren't here yesterday. Those 2 advantages are that, first of all, they're favored by time. No, they've got everything on their side. And the most important thing is that they have properly served their spiritual master and you have not. No. Therefore, you have to bide some time. You have to arrange things in such a way that you will have the advantage. So how does that apply to us? That we're in that position of the demigods. We are also sakam devotees. We may not be pure devotees. So we have to take advantage of whatever situation we're in, move it over to the situation where we're pleasing the spiritual master, where time is in our favor. And then we can surrender to Krishna. No, we can actually take that one more step toward Krishna. This is one instruction that we can get from this particular verse. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj had material desires, and when he saw Krishna, he didn't have any more desire. And the demigods see the Lord time to time, but they still harbor material desire. Is there like a difference? Like, how does it work? Like, how come they don't want, you know, they are not reacting like Dhruva Maharaj did?
Actually, it explains here in this particular verse that the demigods, they really didn't see the Lord. Who actually saw the Lord was Brahma and Shiva. And everybody, just like in the beginning of the 10th canto, it says that Lord Brahma approached the Svetadvipa, but he could not directly see the Lord. No. And when he did see the Lord, And he offered, when he did actually see the Lord with full on darshan, face to face, then he offered his prayers, the Brahma Samhita, and he became a topmost pure devotee. Before that, he was a pure devotee in the sense he was following the process, but he wasn't on the process of spontaneous devotional service. But when he saw the Lord, and he actually got his darshan. So the demigods may see the Lord, but they don't see him perfectly. Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord, and because of his sacrifice, because of his austerity, because of his devotion, because he was instructed. Why did he see the Lord? Because he was instructed by Narad Muni in the process of pure devotion. You chant this mantra, and he chanted it very faithfully, following the orders of the spiritual master. Therefore, when he got his darshan, he was able to surrender completely. But the demigods, they're approaching the Lord out of material distress. They're not approaching the Lord following the instructions of the spiritual master. Therefore, when they get this darshan, they become purified, they become happy, but they're still harboring their material desires. But Dhruva Maharaj's desires were wiped out by the mercy of Narad Muni, and he was able to receive the Lord and surrender to the Lord. His material desires went away. Prahlad Maharaj also, although he had no material desires, because he was born in a demoniac family, he considered that opportunity that the Lord gave him, because he had also been instructed by Sri Narad Muni, and he considered that darshan that he got of Lord Nrisimhadev was his opportunity to actually surrender fully to the Lord. So this is the key point, that when we carefully follow the instructions of the spiritual master, when the spiritual master is guiding us to pure devotion. Otherwise, sometimes people approach the guru, but they put conditions. So the demigods also, when they approach Brihaspati, who is their guru, they always put some conditions. We want this from the Lord, but we don't want this. So Brihaspati gives them some instruction. They can approach the Lord, but it's always conditional. Their approach of the Lord is always conditional. And as long as they maintain that, then they will remain sakam. Of course, sometimes Srila Prabhupada even mentions, there are some places where he mentions that the demigods are pure devotees, in the sense that they're pure devotees when they follow the instruction of the Lord. But then their desires come out, they have all this opulence, all this, and therefore it's said again and again in the Bhagavatam, as previously in this chapter and in the previous chapter, it said this is why Indra created the offense against Durvasa Muni, because he was very attached to his material opulence, and he couldn't see this opportunity to take the blessings of Durvasa Muni fully. So also the demigods or devotees, even we can, in the sense of our own devotees, if we partially follow the instructions of the spiritual master, as Krishna says, yayatamam papadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. So he is manifesting himself in the form of the spiritual master. And when we accept the spiritual master fully, unconditionally, without any reservation, then we will become eligible for darshan. That means when we come, we have darshan now. But if we're conditioned, we'll come before the Lord and we'll put some conditions in our prayers or in our desires, whatever we manifest before the Lord. Or when we chant the holy name, if we're not fully surrendered to Sri Guru and Vaishnava, then we'll also put some conditions to the holy name, or we won't pay sufficient attention. We won't take a full darshan of the holy name. And then we won't get the full benefit of the holy name. We'll get that much benefit, as much as we're surrendering to the holy name, that much benefit we'll get. If we're surrendering 30%, we'll get 30% benefit. Just like Srila Prabhupada said one time, if you surrender to the Lord 20%, then 80% Maya will control you. If you surrender to the Lord 90%, then Maya will control you 10%. And when you surrender to the Lord 100%, then Krishna will control you totally, 100%. Until we come to that 100%, the conditioning is there. and we won't be able to fully appreciate the Lord's beauty, the Lord's presence, the Lord's intervention into our lives. There'll be some little condition there that we have to, we will stipulate. I just need this. Everything is okay, but there's one little thing that I still need. So as long as that little thing is still there, that's what Krishna's trying to dig out of our heart. Because then we'll think, well, why doesn't he recognize all these other? He does. But he just wants to get that last 10%, 5%, 2%. He wants to dig that out. That little bit of Maya that's still there. So that our heart is pure and Krishna can sit there. Therefore, in the Bhagavatam it says, Pravishta Karnarandrena Swanam Bhavam Sarorukam. That when one actually hears with full attention, the Lord will come in through the ears and penetrate to the heart. He'll sit on the lotus flower of our constitutional relationship with Him and reveal Himself to us. So if we just hear purely, and we just allow the Lord to come into our heart and open up the lotus of our eternal relationship with Him, then He will reveal Himself. Any other question? Yes.
When the difficult situation comes, if we react, it basically says that we don't accept Lord's plan. And then it is also said that we have to endeavor. So how to we have to endeavor, and then we also have to accept Lord's plan.
What do you mean by endeavor? You mean like working in this world, or endeavor in devotional service?
Yeah, endeavoring in devotional service, because we are in this world, so our the material endeavors, though we are not pure devotees, but aspiring devotees, so we need that material endeavor also to keep our material situation, so that we can,
We have to offer the fruits. Otherwise, what is the difference between bhakti and karma yoga? The difference is that bhakti starts from the order of Krishna and Guru and manifests. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada would say to a devotee, you can go and you can work. Just like in the beginning in New York, Srila Prabhupada told some of the devotees they could go work because the temple needed some money. So that work was pure bhakti. If they did it in that consciousness, Prabhupada said it, I must do it. No. But if someone goes and works because I want something, I want to have a family, I want to have this, I want to have that, then that becomes karma yoga. Because first I put my desire for, and then I offer the results to Krishna. But when the activity in itself comes from the order of the spiritual master or the supreme Lord, and then I just do it, whether it involves material energy or whether it involves just puja or whether it involves chanting 64 rounds a day or 192 rounds like Haridas Thakur, if that instruction comes, but even if I chant 192 rounds like Haridas Thakur, but that's not the instruction I got from my guru, then that will be karma yoga. Because I'm doing what I want and then I'm offering it to Krishna. So therefore, as we see Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, all the great devotees who would write something or do something for the Lord, Baladeva Dibhushan, before he was requested by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, you please go and present our rendition of Vedanta so that we will be accepted in Jaipur by the Smarta Brahmins. Because they weren't accepting the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they didn't have a Vedanta darshan. So Baladev, what did he do? He prayed to Govindaji. No. He went there and he prayed to Govindaji. This is the instruction I received. Please allow me to do this. He didn't say, I'm going to do this. I'm capable. I'm very intelligent. Very philosophical. No. He went and prayed to Govinda and Govinda manifested. Therefore he calls it the Govinda Bhasya. No. It's coming from Govinda in his heart. So this is... So whatever we're doing, we have to authorize it by Krishna and Guru, not trying to force the Guru, you know, this is what I want to do, so please bless it. No. Yeah, he can do that also. But then it again becomes karma yoga. No. He blesses it because he sees we have that desire. What we our desire is to offer to Krishna. Yes, you do that. No. But if we say, what Srila Prabhupada taught us, how should we approach the Guru? How can I serve you? No. How can I serve you? And whatever comes, that's what I'll do. That's bhakti. No. That is the characteristic of bhakti. It descends. Bhakti descends from the devotees to the Lord to our consciousness, to our hearts. And karma yoga starts from here and goes up. No. That's how we can make it pure. That's difficult because we may not like what we get. No. It's a transcendental lottery. You know, you surrender, you get your number, and whatever you get, then you have to accept it. You know? But that lottery, you always win. That's the difference. You know? It's just that you may not like what you win in the beginning, because it may not be what you wanted or what you thought or what you considered would be the best for me. You know? Any other questions? If they're not connected, they're not close to... There's always Guru. Srila Prabhupada said in one lecture, just one conversation, devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, I've only seen you once in my life, so how can I get instruction from you? And Prabhupada said, temple president, he is Guru. Otherwise, whoever our immediate authority, Krishna will provide someone who's inspiring us. That is the Guru. If our initiating spiritual master is not there, or we can't have a direct communication, there's always some devotee, you know, who is superior to us, who we can accept and they can instruct us. You know? But then we may make, no, but he's not pure, he's not as pure as my guru. So that's our excuse, that I don't want to surrender. You know? I'll surrender to my guru, and because he's far away, I can do it as I like. You know? And if the guru is too close, then well, he's too heavy. You know? Keep my distance. No, I'll just go and offer a flower and then take off before I get, you know, before the instructions come. No. So there's always a way to surrender, but generally speaking, we don't prefer it. We prefer, you know, let me figure it out how I want this surrender to go. No, I always surrender like this. This is my surrender plan. No, A B C D E F G. But that's not Krishna's surrender plan. No. So as long as and Krishna will allow us to carry out our plan, but when it gets to a certain point, Krishna says, this devotee is sincere, but they're acquiring more and more. This is stated in the fifth, I can't remember the verse right now. Satyam disham. Disham satyam. I can't remember it, but in the fifth canto, it says that demigods are praying to the Lord, and they're saying, my dear Lord, whenever someone desires something, you want to give it to them. But if you see that what they desire will again somehow or another engage them in more material desires, then you take that away and in its place you put your lotus feet on their head, even though they don't want it. You know? And in that way, they will come to the point of surrendering to you. So this is what's going on in our lives. We want so many things, but we want it our way. Just like, who was it? What's his name? Famous singer. He said one song, let me do it my way. No. Frank Sinatra, I'll do it my way. No. So this is, he was just revealing the conditioned state. No, I'll do it my way. And so we have to give up that consciousness of doing it my way. But it's very subtle, so it's just totally ingrained in our consciousness that we want to do everything my way. Oh, yes, I'll surrender to Krishna, but I'll do it my way. Any other questions? Thank you very much. All glory to Sri Guru, Sri Gauranga, Sri Prabhupada ki, Anant Koti Vaishnavinda ki jai.
Toh Inspirit Prashad Maharaj ki
jai.